So as I mentioned before, today is the commemoration of the disappearance day of Sanatan Goswami. Also, it's called Guru Purnima. Also, it's the first day of the fasting from spinach for the month. So, several different things. So I want to talk about, first of all, before we start talking about Sanatan Goswami in particular, I want to mention why it's called Guru Purnima. And one misunderstanding that many people have about Guru Purnima. The Mayavadis, does everybody know what a Mayavadi is? Means someone who says, everything's Maya, or everything's God, one of the two things. or God's body is material. The Mayavadis take this day of Guru Purnima as the day to worship the Guru. Now, Prabhupada said, and our acharyas have said, that is impersonal, because the guru is supposed to be worshipped on his own appearance day, not birthday. And that's a personal thing. So it's not that you worship every guru on one day of the year, although that is a Hindu tradition or Mayavadi tradition. We do not follow it. We are against that tradition. Does everybody understand that? The reason it is actually called Guru Purnima is because Sanatan Goswami was the guru of the residents of Vrindavan. That is, of all the residents of Vrindavan, he's the most beloved, of course, along with the other Goswamis of Vrindavan. And because he disappeared on this day, his disappearance day is celebrated as the Guru Purnima. Does everyone understand that? That's why it's called Guru Purnima, in reference to Sanatan Goswami. So now we'll speak about Sanatan Goswami. Of course, Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami and his brother Anupama were and are Nitya Siddha devotees. That means they came from the spiritual world to accomplish a particular purpose for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their names before were Amara, Santosh. Amara, of course, that was Rupa Goswami, Santosh, and Balaba or Anupama, the three brothers like that. Now, Anupama or Balaba, the third brother, he was a devotee of Lord Ramchandra. And the other two Goswamis of Vrindavan, that is Sanatan and Rupa, always try to convince Anupama to worship Krishna instead of Lord Ram. But they were unable to do that. It's interesting. It's like if someone joined the Krishna consciousness movement today and they just kept chanting Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Sita Ram, Sita Ram on their beads. We probably want to kick them out of the temple, right? What are you doing? You haven't taken the Bhakti Shastra course. But actually, he was a pure devotee of Lord Ramchandra. So what's being illustrated there is that we have to have basic compassion and understanding for devotees of different forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anyway, that's one story. So Sanatan Goswami appeared in the year 1488 CE. That means Common Era. Sometimes you hear dates given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Shakabda. Anyone's heard that before? Does anyone know what that means? It's not a spiritual designation. It means the year after the Asian invasion of India. So nobody should go around saying Shakabda means Chaitanya year. It doesn't. It refers to some history in the country of India. So he appeared in 1488, and he studied philosophy along with Rupa Goswami and Balaba from the brother of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vidya Vachaspati, and they became very learned in Sanskrit. Now, in his youth, he didn't have a Srimad Bhagavatam, because in those days, the books were handwritten. That's before the advent of the printing press. So it's very hard to get it, Srimad Bhagavatam. So one night, Sanatan Goswami, as a little boy, was dreaming. And in that dream, a young boy, who happened to be Krishna, came to him and gave him the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so he woke up in complete ecstasy, thinking, oh, where am I going to get a Bhagavatam? That same day, a little boy came, and he wasn't a member of Panchatattva Mandir here, so anyway, you understand how we're distributing books. That same boy came and distributed a book to Sanatan Goswami in external reality. And that boy, of course, was Krishna. So Krishna goes on book distribution. So it's completely bona fide. He goes on Padyatra and book distribution. So he took that book and he kept it with him and he glorified that book. And this book was the very soul of Sanatana Goswami, Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course we know from Srimad Bhagavatam, when the sages asked the question, by what are religious principles protected in this age of Kali now that Krishna has left for his own abode? And the answer is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there's Bhagavat Purana, which of course is as brilliant as the sun. There's many verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam concerning this. So as he grew up and got educated, he took employment within the government of the Nawab Hussein Shah. Nawab Hussein Shah was like the governor of this particular part of Bengal. He was Muslim, of course. There's a king, too. It's not only that he was the governor, there was a king, a Muslim king above him. So the reason he took employment is in the service of a Muslim is actually quite interesting, because normally people from a high-class family like Sanatana Goswami was, and I'm talking about high-class Brahminical family. He was from the Saraswata Gotra family, and in India, they generally ask you, what Gotra are you from? That basically means, what family line are you from? And if you go into a temple, especially in South India, they'll say, what is your Gotra? And you better know how to respond. You better not say Slovenia. Prabhupada instructed us to say Achyuta Gotra. That means we're in the family of Krishna, who is infallible. So he was from a very high-class South Indian Brahminical family, although his family was living in Bengal at that time. So he took service from the Muslims. Now, in those days, if you took service from the Muslims, guess what? It was considered that you had lost your Brahminical status, lost your Hinduism, lost your caste, lost everything, and you had become Muslim. In fact, one of the ways the Muslims converted people in those days was not simply by giving them employment, but by sprinkling water on someone from their water pot. So in other words, a Muslim would come by and take some water from his water pot and throw it on you and say, oh my God, now I've become a Muslim, I have to leave the temple and onto... Can you imagine that? And then, you know, the devotee would show up one day with a beard and everything like that. And then God knows what would happen after that. So that was the system. It was such a strict system. This is actually, in fact, one of Lord Chaitanya's associates, I believe his name was Subhuti Roy, this story is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that a Muslim king threw some water on him because previously this king had been his servant. And when he grew up, the king's wife was very upset. In other words, the king, when he was a child, was the servant of Subhuti Roy, and Subhuti Roy one time hit him. So when he grew up, the king's wife said to the king, the Muslim king, that you should convert Subhuti Roy into a Muslim. So the king went and he threw some water on Subhuti Roy. And Subhuti Roy said, now I've become a Muslim. Then he went to some Brahmins and he asked the Brahmins, what can I do now that I've become a Muslim? What can I do? And the Brahmin said, well, the only remedy is to drink hot lead. So that's quite an interesting herbal remedy, to drink hot lead. So he then went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, no, just chant Hare Krishna. everything will be all right. So that's all we have to do. We don't have to worry about all these different rituals and things like that. We just chant Hare Krishna, and everything will be all right. As the doctor says, chant Hare Krishna and call me in the morning. You know, like they say, take two pills and call me in the morning. So anyway, Sanatana Goswami actually took a Muslim name, Sakara Malik. And, of course, his brother's name was Dabir Kash, Rupa Goswami's name. And this basically meant that they were in charge of different branches of the government. These names indicated Anupama actually became the treasurer, something like that. So they were working for the government. Why did they work for the government? Because the Muslim king, or the Muslim Nawab Hussein Shah, threatened their family members in their village that unless you work for me, I'm going to kill you all. So if someone said that to us, I mean, obviously we'd start working for them, right? If someone said, I'm going to kill all the devotees in the temple unless you work for the supermarket. Now, normally you wouldn't want to work for the supermarket, right? Because they're selling so many abominable things, meat, fish, eggs, cigarettes, everything. And so, but if someone threatened to kill all the devotees in the temple, I think you would work for the supermarket, wouldn't you? You would sacrifice yourself for the other Vaishnavas. And this is in fact what Dabir Kas, Shakara Balak, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami did. They sacrificed themselves, and they also got paid a lot of money too, but that wasn't a motivation. It's described they got paid so much money they had mansions. In fact, when Rupa Goswami renounced this world, he had boatloads of gold coins. I mean, they were very, very wealthy. Of course, that's described in the prayers of Srinivasacharya, that when they became the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they renounced all this aristocracy to take up the service of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when they took sannyas, they simply wore kopina kong tashrito, like gamchas, kopina, you know, very, very simple. That's our traditional sannyas dress. Now, I don't dress like that, because you wouldn't let me give class if I dressed like that. It'd be all over Facebook if I dressed like that. You know, so our sannyas dress actually came from Srila Prabhupada. I mean, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is studying the South Indian devotees and also the Ramakrishna Mission to see what was best for preaching. So this is a preaching dress. This precisely is not a Gaudiya sannyas dress, although it is now. But it's traditionally a preaching dress. In other words, we dress whatever way is best for preaching Krishna consciousness. If it would be best for me to go out in a gumsha, I would do that too. But it's not. So, anyway, so they were living there in this very wealthy men, and they constructed in their gardens a replica of Vrindavan, because they were pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of God in spite of working for the Muslim government. So they had all these different replicas of the holy places in Vrindavan, like Govardhan, Shaimakund, Radhakund, the city of Vrindavan, the town of Vrindavan, because now it's a city. Used to be a town. And Varshana, Nandagon, all these other places. So you would go into their garden. See, it's very beautiful. Like many of our temples are set up, or farm communities are set up in that particular way, where they have different replicas of different parts of Vrindavan. Like in Hungary, they have that, and also in Australia. It's like New Govardhan, and you just walk all around the property, and you can see Radhakund and Shyamakund and all these other places. So they were very happy doing this, not working for the Muslim governor, but in their own internal life, concentrating on Krishna consciousness. They heard about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were very much anxious to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although they were in anxiety, because if they had gone to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were afraid the Muslim governor or the Nawab Hussein Shah would have attacked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they resided in a city or a town called Ramakeli. Now, in that town, While they were there, they heard that Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas, and they were thinking, we'll never get a chance to see him. Then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proceeded to Vrindavan, and on the way to Vrindavan, he wanted to say goodbye to his mother. So he passed through Ramakeli on his way from Jagannath Puri to Vrindavan. And therefore, Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, or Dabirakas and Shakara Malik, along with Anupama, got a chance to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's a very touching story told in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about their encounter with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They actually put straws between their teeth. This is a tradition in India that if you want to show humility, you put a straw between your teeth and you bow down. In fact, that's why we offer obeisances as a sign of humility, submission, so that we will hear better. And they bow down to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In spite of being such educated personalities, they said, you know, that we don't know anything, so please instruct us about Krishna consciousness. So while Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Ramakeli, they got very nervous about his being there, because the Nawab Hussein Shah was there, and actually the king of Bengal was close by too. And they were afraid for Lord Chaitanya's safety. But Lord Chaitanya had made arrangements because the king, the Muslim king's assistant, was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he advised the Muslim king not to bother Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Muslim king sort of respected Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They thought, oh, he's a prophet. They didn't understand he was God. But still, Sanatana and Rupa Goswami advised Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is how great devotees they were. They were able to advise the Supreme Personality of Godhead, please get out of here as soon as possible, because it's dangerous. And also they advised Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not to go to Vrindavan at that time. Now that's surprising. Why would you tell God not to go to Vrindavan? Well, the reason was that Lord Chaitanya was being followed by thousands and thousands of people on the way to Vrindavan. And they said, this is not the right way to enter Vrindavan in a big group like this. They compared it like a circus. They said, this will disturb the mood of Vrindavan. When you go to Vrindavan, you should go just alone with one servant. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, upon hearing this, did not go to Vrindavan. He went back to Jagannath Puri. He actually took advice from Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Very, very interesting story, isn't it? How the Lord took advice from them. And of course, nowadays in Vrindavan, it is like a city. I don't know if anyone's been to Vrindavan recently, but the rural, peaceful mood of Vrindavan has been destroyed by all these different high-rise buildings. When I first went to Vrindavan in 1972, 73, something like that, there were just peacocks everywhere. There were no motorized vehicles. You could hardly find a bicycle rickshaw. You had to make a reservation in advance to get a bicycle rickshaw. You were woken up in the morning with the peacocks. Like that. Now you're kept awake all night in the cars, the smog, and everything, isn't it? And crossing the road is almost suicidal in Vrindavan. So everything's changed completely from the village mood. In fact, that's why I generally stay at Govardhan now, because it's still peaceful, and the government is actually protecting it in such a way so it doesn't become like Vrindavan is. They're making practically the whole area around Govardhan a green zone, which means they're tearing down the houses and much of the construction around Govardhan Hill, except for the temples around Govardhan Hill. So it's very nice, and then widening the parikrama path. So eventually, after meeting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they decided to leave and join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And eventually, of course, they wanted to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri and eventually in Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami left first. And when he left, he divided up his wealth in a certain way. like half for the Vaishnavas and Brahmins, then a quarter for family members, and a quarter for emergencies. And there was an emergency that occurred. What occurred was that after Rupa Goswami left, Sanatana Goswami also wanted to leave, but he couldn't leave because the Nawab wouldn't let him leave. So instead of leaving directly, he made believe that he was sick and stayed home all the time. And he stayed home and he heard the Bhagavatam from the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, and he was very happy, and he kept sending these sick notices to the Nawab. The Nawab eventually sent his own physician to see what was happening with Sanatana Goswami, and he discovered that Sanatana Goswami was not sick. So the Nawab arranged to come to the house of Sanatana Goswami and said, "What are you doing? I need your help. You should go with me to conquer more territory." And Sanatana Goswami said, "You're simply going to torture innocent living entities. I'm not going with you." And he wanted to aggravate the Nawab so that he felt relieved from his sense of responsibility. So the Nawab basically put him in prison. And the Nawab left, and Sanatana Goswami did what is natural in India to get out of prison. He bribed the jailer. So bribery is part of our sampradaya. You know, so he actually said to the jailer that, first of all, he preached him. He said, "Anyone who liberates someone else goes back to heaven." So the jailer was thinking, liberation, yes, let someone free from prison. But Sanatana was thinking, preaching, that it was actually spiritual liberation. So then he kept offering the jailer more and more, and finally the jailer said, "All right, I'll let you go. What are you going to do?" And Sanatana Goswami said to the jailer, "You can just tell them that Sanatana Goswami was going to the river to pastule or take a bath or something like that, and he jumped in with all of his chains and died." So that was a good excuse. So the jailer took the money. Sanatana Goswami leaves. He leaves with one servant. It's a famous story. The servant has, unbeknownst, that means not known to Sanatana Goswami, the servant has 8 gold coins with him. So these 8 gold coins, the problem is in India, if you have money, you're in trouble. So better not to have money. Jai Shri Panchatattva Ki Jai Shri Gornatara Ki Jai. So, anyway, getting back to the story. So, it's dangerous, and especially in India in those days, they had expert astrologers, palmists, who could tell if you had money. Nowadays, it's very easy to tell if a Western person has money. You just look at the money bag. They have, in India, they used to call the Western devotees blue bellies because they were to carry a money bag in their stomach. And the people in India became very expert. They put razor blades in their fingernails so they could cut it off and take off your money belt. So don't carry money with you. So anyway, Sanatana Goswami and his servant Ishan proceeded, and they wanted to get over some mountains, and they approached a hotel keeper for help. And the hotel keeper knew that they had 8 gold coins. Sanatana Goswami didn't know that they had 8 gold coins. And the hotel keeper became very friendly. It's said in the Nitya Shastras, too much devotion is the sign of a thief. So if someone becomes very devoted to you, then wonder, what do they want? Isn't it if someone comes up to you and says, "Oh, you're so wonderful, you're so blissful, you chant so nicely. What, you want to marry me?" So one has to be very careful, because people have other motives like that. So Sanatana Goswami understood this. Then he asked his servant, "Do you have anything, any gold?" And the servant said, "I have 7 gold coins." So he lied to Sanatana Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami let the servant go, gave the gold coins to the hotel keeper. The hotel keeper apologized, said, "I was going to kill you, but now that I got your money, I don't need to kill you. So I'll help you over the mountains." So he helped Sanatana Goswami go over the mountain. Sanatana Goswami eventually came in touch with his uncle or nephew, whose name was Srikant, and he got a very nice shawl, like a chador, from this person. Then he arrived in Varanasi to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by the time he arrived in Varanasi to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had a big beard. He looked like a Muslim mendicant. And he was disheveled except for the nice cloth. So he knocks on the door of Chandrasekhar, who Lord Chaitanya was staying with. And Chandrasekhar opens the door. And he says to Lord Chaitanya, there's a Muslim mendicant at the door. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, it's not a Muslim mendicant. It's a great devotee. So they let him in. And Lord Chaitanya, one of the first things he says to Sanatana Goswami, he says, shave up. You know, get rid of the beard. So Prabhupada also said that we are known as Keshahin. Keshahin means without hair, except for the ladies, of course. So one who has facial hair, they're not really, Prabhupada said they're not his disciple. If one has, you know, beard, something like that. So anyway, so Sanatana Goswami shaved up, and he still had this shawl, this very beautiful, I guess, wool shawl, and Lord Chaitanya kept looking at it. And Sanatana Goswami was wondering, why is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeping staring at my shawl? And the reason was that it wasn't appropriate for someone in the renounced order of life then to have a nice shawl, because people would criticize. How kind of a devotee are you? You're walking around with this $500 shawl. So nowadays, of course, sannyasis sometimes have these opulent things, and that's okay because we're preaching to a different crowd. It was all based on Lord Chaitanya's understanding about what would be best for Sanatana Goswami's preaching. So Sanatana Goswami goes to the river and exchanges the shawl for a patchwork quilt of a man or Muslim there. Patchwork means it has so many holes in it, and it's just been sewn up so many times, it looks like different pieces of cloth. And he goes back, and Lord Chaitanya is very, very happy. He says, Lord Chaitanya says something like, if one has leprosy, if it gets rid of leprosy, if there's one spot remaining, that's not good. I'm paraphrasing. So one who's taken the renounced order of life, there should not be any spots left on the person's character. So Sanatana Goswami takes instruction from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Varanasi. And basically he's sent by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Vrindavan. And he's sent to Vrindavan to do different things. One is to uncover the sites of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Two is to install the deities representing the different moods and deities, original moods of Krishna and Vrindavan. Three is to write Vaishnava literatures. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipanosa Dharma Samstapako, understanding eternal religious principles. And four, establish rules of devotional life. So he goes to Vrindavan, and when he's in Vrindavan, he discovers that Rupa Goswami has already left. So then he goes back to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when he goes to Jagannath Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the problem is, on the way to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's gone through the forest and not eaten properly, so he has all these running sores on his body. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu keeps embracing him. And he's completely embarrassed. Why is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embracing me with these sores with pus and everything coming out? And so he decides to commit suicide. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understands this and forbids Sanatana Goswami from committing suicide. He said, look, if I thought I could achieve Krishna's favor by committing suicide, I would give up this body millions of times. Don't do it. You're my servant. You're meant to carry out my purposes. Your body is my property, Lord Chaitanya says to Sanatana Goswami. I have a mission for you. You should not take another's property and destroy it. So Sanatana Goswami says, all right, And then he's still feeling guilty. He said, I got to leave Jagannath Puri because I'm committing offenses all the time being here. And then what happens is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understands this, understands that Sanatana Goswami has gotten this instruction from Jagannanda Pandit, and he chastises Jagannanda Pandit. He says, Sanatana, actually, I am not feeling disgusted upon embracing you. When I embrace you, I smell a very fragrant smell, chatushana, it's called, like sandalwood and camphor and everything like that. And then, ultimately, he admits it's because of his love for Sanatana Goswami. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu loves Sanatana Goswami so much, just like a mother embraces a little baby, even though the baby does things that I won't mention in class. Well, there's no brahmacharis here. But let's say if a brahmachari saw a baby, you know, passing a stool, he'd go, ooh! Right? Disgusting. But if the mother or the father sees, oh, sandalwood pulp. That's what Bhagavatam says. I am not inventing this. So Lord Chaitanya tests Sanatana Goswami finally by asking him to come to see him. And Sanatana Goswami knows there's only two ways to go to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that particular point. One is past the temple, where with his sores he'll contaminate the priests who are going in and out of the temple, or on the beach, and it's like 50 degrees out, centigrade. And so he takes the beach route so as not to contaminate any of the pujaris, and he has blisters on his feet, and Lord Chaitanya is very pleased. Lord Chaitanya embraces him, and all the sores go away. Wow. Pretty nice story, isn't it? So eventually, he goes back to Vrindavan, and when he's in Vrindavan, many interesting things happen. One is that he is chanting on the top of this hill called Dwadasadicha, which means 12 suns, because that's where Krishna went to dry himself up off after dancing on the heads of the Kaliya serpent. And so this little boy comes up to him and says, Baba, that's a respectable name, Baba, I want to live with you. And of course, this little boy is Krishna, but Sanatana Goswami doesn't recognize that it's Krishna. And Sanatana Goswami says, no, you just go back home. You'll have nothing to eat. I just eat dried bread balls. And the boy says, whatever you eat, I'll eat. And so that, of course, is the deity of Madan Mohan, and who has come to Sanatana Goswami. So then the next morning, he actually finds the deity at his doorstep or right outside of his hut. And then he takes care of the deity. There's many stories about that deity. That deity was originally discovered by Advaitacharya. And when the Muslims attacked Advaitacharya, so when the Muslims attacked, Advaitacharya gave the deity to a Chobe family, that's a type of Brahmin family, in Mathura, and this family was playing with the deity like the deity was their son. In other words, not on the altar, they would sit the deity down at the dinner table with everybody else. Don't try that. So in other words, take, like if you took Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and it's time for prasadam, you went to the prasadam room, and they came down with you to take prasadam. That would be the same thing. So they were playing, and then the little boy was playing marbles with the deity. And when Sanatana Goswami went there, he chastised the family. He said, you're not worshiping in the right way. But that night, Sanatana Goswami also had a dream, and the deity chastised him, and he said, you're ruining all my fun. Now you'll have to take care of me. So anyway, so eventually, the person who was taking care of the deity got the order from Madan Mohan, whose name was Madan Gopal at that time. And he gave the deity to Sanatana Goswami, and that's why Sanatana Goswami found the deity outside of his kutir. And so, worshipping that deity, Sanatana Goswami didn't have many implements. All he could offer to the deity was dried bread balls. And Prabhupada tells this story too, that the deity started to complain. The deity said, just dried bread balls every day? Can you get some salt for me? And Sanatan Goswami said, look, I have all this work to do for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, writing Vaishnava literatures and establishing the holy places in Vrindavan. So I don't have time. Now you're asking for salt, and what next day you'll be asking for ghee. Prabhupada tells the story that way. And so he said to the deity, if you want salt, you have to make your own arrangements. So the deity made his own arrangements. Oh, very shortly after that, there was a boat filled with salt that was stuck on a sandbar in the Yamuna River. And what happened is the owner of the boat came up to Sanatan Goswami, because Sanatan Goswami is on this hill overlooking the Yamuna River. It's called Dwadasadicha Hill, which I described before. And he said to Sanatan Goswami, please help me free my boat. And Sanatan Goswami said, I can't do anything. Go talk to Madan Mohan. See if he can do something. So this Kapoor was his name. He went to the deity and said, please help me free the boat. And if you free the boat, I'll give you the money from selling the salt. So what happened is there was a big storm. The water rose. The boat was freed. And the money was used to construct the Madan Mohan Temple. It's a very nice story. So that was Madan Mohan, who was worshipped. And today you can actually see the deity Madan Mohan is in Karoli now. Many of the deities were moved out of Vrindavan, in fact, practically all of them, because the Muslims attacked. And Sanatan Goswami, just let's see, what other stories do we have here? Oh, yeah, there's another story, just one other story. We won't go on forever. Is that Rupa Goswami, the younger brother of Sanatan Goswami, wanted to make some sweet rice for Sanatan Goswami. But he didn't have any ingredients. So he was thinking, I really want to make sweet rice. And this beautiful girl comes up, young girl comes up to him and gives him rice and milk and sugar. And so he says, who are you? She says, well, I'm just a village girl. Here's a present for you. Because they were doing madhukari, which meant like a bee, they were going from house to house collecting different ingredients, the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So what happened is that Rupa Goswami started to make this sweet rice, and he gave it to Sanatan Goswami after offering it. And Sanatan Goswami, after taking it, exhibited so many symptoms of ecstasy, he understood this is not normal sweet rice. He said, where did you get the ingredients from? And Rupa Goswami said, a small girl, very beautiful girl, little girl, gave me the ingredients. And Sanatan Goswami started to chastise his brother. He said, that was Radharani. You are taking service from Radharani. You're not supposed to take service from Radharani. You're supposed to serve Srimati Radharani. So Rupa Goswami said, okay, no more. So in this way, Sanatan Goswami lived in Vrindavan, and Vrindavan he did compile two of his most famous books. One is called the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which are the rules and regulations for Vaishnavas, some of which rules we follow, some of which rules we don't, because many of these rules are meant for people in India. Prabhupada comments on this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Sanatan Goswami was trying to attract ritualistic Brahmanas. I mean, one of the rules, for example, I mentioned that in my seminar in Serbia, one of the rules in the Hari Bhakti Vilas is don't eat carrots. Let me ask it in the negative. Who follows that rule? Is there anyone here who doesn't eat carrots? No. So you're all rascals, including me, because I eat carrots too. So the reason for that rule was so the ritualistic Brahmanas would respect us, because there's some ritualistic rule that the carrot is the bones and the blood of the sages. But Prabhupada fed us carrots on a regular basis. Especially on the Kadasi, he made carrot halwa. So we are enthusiastic about carrots. They're good for the eyes. So there's other things too. I mean, sometimes people say, we're not supposed to eat mushrooms. Of course, we don't offer mushrooms to the deities. But if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll see that Lord Chaitanya ate mushrooms when he was going through the forest. It actually says that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Hare Krishna. So, Don't criticize me when you see on internet me eating mushrooms. Let your tongue eat them. Anyway, so as far as the books by Sanatana Goswami, basically many commentaries, but the basic, most important books were the Hari Bhakti Vilas and the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This Brihad Bhagavatamrita has been published by ISKCON. I think some of you may have read it. I don't think it's been translated into Slovenian, has it? You should. Should translate it. I'll teach you an easy way to publish books later on for no money at all, if you ask me. So anyway, so in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all the truth, the Siddhanta, perfect conclusion, that's what Siddhanta means, of the Vaishnava religion are contained in two stories. One story is Narada Muni looking for the best devotee of the Lord. Another story is Gopakumar looking to establish his eternal relationship with Krishna as a coward boy. A beautiful book, storybook, and everything is exhibited. Everything is portrayed, the whole philosophy, in this particular book. And this book became the foundational book of all the other Goswami's literatures. So, today is the disappearance day of Sanatana Goswami, so we should remember him. Any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, complaints, suggestions? Yes. No. No, Guru Purnima was specifically came about due to Sanatana Goswami's passing away on that particular day. And if you're in Vrindavan or if you're in Govardhan or any place in Braj, you will see the largest crowds imaginable on this day. I mean, I've been there. I've been in Govardhan on this day. And you cannot move. You cannot get into Govardhan. They don't allow the cars to enter. It is the biggest day of the year. And the main temple of Govardhan to Sanatana Goswami is in the middle of the, not in the middle, but right next to the Manasaganga. His Bhajan Kutir is there. And Chakrayesha Mahadev, that means a temple to Lord Shiva, is there. And Lord Shiva protected Sanatana Goswami as he was doing his writing in the Govardhan area. By getting rid of the mosquitoes. There's a famous story there. Also, there's another story about Sanatana Goswami that just comes to mind. Is that Sanatana Goswami would go around Govardhan every day when he was in the Govardhan area. And so when he got very old, he wasn't able to walk around Govardhan anymore. And so he wanted to go, and Krishna said, "You're too old." And Sanatana said, "I've taken this vow." So Krishna came to him, and he gave him a Govardhan Shila. And he said, if you just circumambulate this Govardhan Shila every day, that's the same thing. And on that Govardhan Shila was the imprint of Krishna's foot, of a calf's foot, or a cow's foot, a flute, and a flute of Krishna. And so that Govardhan Shila is today being worshipped in Vrindavan. No, not at Manasiganga. It's in which Vrindavan temple it is. Maybe, I forget which Vrindavan temple. Radha-damodar, that's right. It's at the Radha-damodar temple. Thank you for reminding me. At the Radha-damodar temple. And they'll pull the shila out so you can see. So all you have to do is circumambulate a Govardhan shila. You don't have to go all the way around Govardhan. Pretty good. So I'll be charging admission later on. 100 euros to go around my Govardhan shila. Oh, yeah, the mosquitoes at the Manasiganga, right near the chakra tree. Chakra tree is the tree that marks the spot where the Sudarshan Chakra was on top of Govardhan Hill, drying up the rain so it didn't actually hit Govardhan Hill. There is the Bhajan Kutir of Sanatana Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami, and there's also the Dikpala, the guardian of that area, who is Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva is the Dikpala, the guardian of the various areas of Braj, such as in Vrindavan, the town of Vrindavan, Gopishra Mahadev. So there it's Chakaleshwar Mahadev. It's Kundeshwar Mahadev at Radhakund. Anyway, so what happened is Sanatan Goswami was bothered by mosquitoes. And he's thinking, I got to leave here. This is just too much, mosquitoes. And then Lord Shiva appeared to him and said, I will protect you from the mosquitoes. No mosquitoes will bother you. And yeah, they're very few. I haven't gotten bitten by any there. I haven't gotten bitten by any mosquitoes at Govardhan at all. It's interesting. I'm sure there are some. But I've never gotten bitten by a mosquito at Govardhan. Pretty good. Now, in Mayapur, it's the opposite. Mayapur, Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, he keeps the mosquitoes who are his devotees there. In Mayapur, the mosquitoes, they're so big and ferocious that even if you get a mosquito repellent, they carry it away. They spray it on you. Isn't it? I mean, and every night trying to sleep is like being in the airport, listening to the planes. Anyone's had that experience in Mayapur? Yeah. And Prabhupada said in the Holy Dham, the only time you can swat a mosquito is when it actually starts to attack you. Because that story Shrutakirti told Prabhupada's servant that they were in the mosquito net and there was a mosquito inside and Shrutakirti wanted to hit him. Prabhupada said, no, don't hit him. But when he landed, Prabhupada said, kill him! He's attacked! So even in the Holy Dham, you have to respect the mosquitoes. But, it's a fact. Now that I think of it, I have not been bitten. Some other people might have been bitten, but I haven't been bitten by mosquitoes. Or by snakes. If one worships Govardhan, the snakes won't bite you. Some people are so much in anxiety about snakes. One time in our house at Govardhan, someone pulled out the electrical panel in order to fix it, you know, an electrician. And behind there, it was a friendly cobra in the wall. So, anyway, chant Hare Krishna. Anyway, there's villages of snake charmers there at Govardhan. As you go around, there's some villages that if you do get bitten by a snake, they know how to extract the poison with mantras. So, don't worry. But Krishna says anyone who's worships Govardhan properly will not be bitten by snakes. That's our protection. All right, any other questions? Yes.
So I know a few devotees who are very, how to say, they don't like to accept service from others. But they like to serve others.
That's nice.
So, in accordance with this story, when Srimati Radharani brings
the rice and the, yeah.
How is that? Why he shouldn't accept service?
Well, because he shouldn't accept service from Srimati Radharani. It's not that he shouldn't accept service from other persons, because the Goswamis of Vrindavan were doing this Madhukari Vrat, which means, Madhukari means like a bee taking a little bit of honey or pollen from each little flower. So it's one of the stages of sannyas where you go door to door and you say, Bhiksha! And everyone gives you one roti. And that's why sannyasis have this cape. to collect their rotis. Roti means chapati, sorry. You may not know what that means. Or they give them fruit, or they give them something else. So, in other words, he wouldn't want go to one person's house and say, give me five rotis, three bowls of dough, three pizzas, and pack them all in a plastic container, so I'll have them to eat tomorrow. He just takes a little. So, yes, he accepts. That's part of a sannyasi's duty, to accept things. Isn't it? Dadati pratigranati guyamakyati prichati bungte bojate chaiva. That's six loving exchanges. If someone wants to do something for you, it's better to accept it. I mean, it depends on what they want to do for you. You know, if they want to cook meat for you, you don't accept that. But if someone wants to serve, you accept. That's reciprocal service. Dadati pratigranati. But if Radharani comes and wants to serve you, no. We don't do that. If Lord Chaitanya comes to you and says, my dear devotee, what can I do for you? Don't pull out your list. But sure, I mean, sometimes people say to me, very often, you know, what do you need? And usually I say, $1 million. And they say, no. Big offense. I'm just joking, of course. So, any other questions? Yes, Lisa.
When we are listening to the best times, for example, like some are really unusual. And we don't understand it, or I can't even imagine if it happened. But I have like tendency to understand it, or I don't know what exactly it is. But what should be our attitude toward the Guru?
Well, we can ask other devotees, you know, please explain this to us more. And sometimes, you know, just accept things on the basis of faith, that I may not understand how that's possible. It sounds pretty far out, unusual, but somehow or other it happened. I can't understand how, but I do understand it did happen. And then, anyway, you can always talk, it's better to talk to other devotees if there's some feeling of incredulity that, oh, it's incredible. How did that happen? Like, if someone says, I saw Ananta floating in the air yesterday. He was chanting Hare Krishna in ecstasy, and it was touching the ceiling of the temple. Ask for more witnesses. Ask for the web camera. So, anyway. Yeah, so you can just talk to the devotees about it. Yeah, but some things are really difficult. I mean, how... You know, if I said that Radharani came and gave me something yesterday, well... You should ask me about it a few times. Good question. But, you know, it's unusual things happen. But I think in every religion or spiritual path, there's always these miracles that occur. You know, really amazing miracles. In fact, in the Catholic Church, for someone to be a saint, they have to do some miracle, isn't it? Anyone know about that? They have to have some miracle. I've never done a miracle. But Prabhupada did a miracle. He changed hippies to happies. This is a miracle that we're sitting here today talking with Panchatattva, isn't it? In the middle of Europe. You know, and actually I was just reading about the Europeans. And this is not to insult anybody, because my family is also from Europe, so. That... Generally, the European races were Kirata Huns. Anyway, they were kicked out of India by Parashuram, or they rejected Vedic culture, whatever like that. So it's amazing in this in anywhere in the Western world, Paschacha Dejatarni, it's amazing that people are practicing Krishna consciousness. And people in India were amazed when Prabhupada brought back his dancing white elephants. So that's a miracle, isn't it? It's a miracle we're sitting here today talking about Krishna in the Western world. Whew. Unbelievable. So, good question. Any other questions? Yes?
You mentioned carrots before, that we're not supposed to eat them. I read in some article, I think it was on Ramblets or somewhere, I can't remember, that if you eat eggplant, Krishna will turn his face away from you.
These are injunctions. Actually, Prabhupada liked eggplant, and he cooked it. So these are injunctions. All these things like carrots, a lot of the root vegetables. Like if you go to Jagannath Puri, they won't cook any root vegetables for a variety of reasons. Tomatoes, the same thing. Because most of these vegetables, I mean, carrots were there originally, but most of these vegetables weren't there when Lord Chaitanya was there. Weren't there 500 years. They didn't have tomatoes. Potatoes came from Europe also. Tomatoes came from South America. Chili peppers, which you all love, came from South America. Lychees are from India.
No, nightshade
vegetables, some of them might have been there, but at least the nightshades like tomatoes and eggplants weren't. They came later to India. They were there at the time of Sanatan Goswami, some of the nightshades. So these are, I would say these are different rituals or superstitions. We have many superstitions. I mean, for example, I talked about this at our seminar. For example, like Brahmins, they have what's called a Brahmin thread, right? So you hear sometimes that if a Brahmin chants his Gayatri mantra with the thread out instead of being covered, the demon will come and steal his mantra away. Anyone's heard that? A demon will come and steal the mantra away. So it's interesting, how is a piece of cloth protecting me from a demon? I've always wondered that. I mean, the reason we cover it, I cover it, is because it's a private thing. Prabhupada, there's many pictures of Prabhupada chanting, actually practically all the pictures of Prabhupada chanting Gayatri had is the thread out. So you'll find a lot of superstitions that come about because India, many reasons, India has been a captive country for over 2,000 years, you know, since practically the beginning of the first millennium, shortly thereafter. India was captive, you know, you had Alexander the Great, you had so many people invading India, and so there's a conglomeration or a mixture of different cultures with different superstitions that made their way into India. And a lot of those different superstitions made their way into different Vedic literatures that were changed. Sripad Madhvacharya states that the Mahabharata was corrupted. Corrupted means changed, not corrupted in a bad sense. So there's something like 84 different versions of the Mahabharata. And some of them differ, not with the main story, but they differ with details. Like how Parashara Muni and Satyavati had Vyasadeva as a son. Sometimes they're depicted as getting married in a whole marriage ceremony. Sometimes it's on an island. And he creates a fog. I mean, there's different stories like that. So therefore, they made their way into different Puranas. Different superstitions have made their way into different Puranas that were not passed down in disciplic succession. We know that the Bhagavad Purana has been passed down in disciplic succession, and of course the Bhagavad Gita has been passed down in disciplic succession. Mahabharata, no, not really. Madhvacharya, his commentary, Tatpara Nirnaya, his commentary on the Mahabharata, makes is very specific in that commentary. So And certain quotes from Vedic literatures, which the acharyas give us, are bona fide. But that's why I find it really interesting when devotees are pulling from this Purana, that Purana, and quotes that have not been verified by our acharyas. Because we don't know if we have the original version or how much has been changed. So you'll find, I think in any culture there are superstitions. I mean, like in the West we have our number 13, right? Anyone's heard of 13 before? It's considered, yeah, Friday the 13th is considered unlucky. So if you ever go to a hotel that has many floors, it doesn't have 13th floor on it. Do you ever notice that? Well, I have. It jumps from the 12th to the 14th. Why? Because nobody wants to live on the 13th floor. But that's just our culture. If you go to India, 13 is considered an auspicious number.
Or number 4.
Yeah, the Chinese. So every culture has its different superstitions. And so we have to be able to differentiate, you know, our Siddhanta from the superstitions or things that have maybe been changed. And so, and of course, Sanatana Goswami wanted to preach to people with those superstitions, which were the ritualistic brahmanas. He wanted to make the higher class people devotees. So you have to have rules that are in tune with that. So, very important. I mean, certain things are set in stone, like Ekadashi is very important. And, of course, chanting the holy names. These are all essential items. Actually, if you read Rupa Goswami's Nectar Devotion, of course, most of you have, he gives the essential items and some items that are not essential in devotional circles, you know, like accepting the spiritual master, living in a holy place, worshiping the deity, worshiping Tulsi. These are all essential items of devotional service. And, of course, if you were in India, then, and you were preaching to ritualistic Brahmins, you should not eat carrots. Because they'll criticize you for eating carrots. But here, I will eat carrots. I like carrots. I am sorry. I apologize to all you ritualistic Brahmins who don't like carrots. I like sauerkraut, cabbage, you know, all these things. Eggplants, too. Okay, so I guess that's it. Time for carrot halva. Time for breakfast, carrot breakfast, sorry. Okay, all glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Sanatana Goswami, Ki Jai.